Hello, everyone, and welcome to our nutritional endocrinology practitioner training call, the Advanced Clinical Resources call. And we are so, so very excited to have with us today a very special guest, someone who I admire for what she's done in the world of functional medicine and nutrition. And also, I consider her a dear friend. She has the biggest heart and really cares about helping people to make life better. And she's got an amazing story herself. She's a board certified OBGYN, and she's from Emory University, where their training was very rigorous. She led a traditional kind of alternative kind of OBGYN practice, and then started getting doing programs online, and developed a product called Mighty Maca, which most of you know about. If you don't know about, you need to know about. There's a link in our newsletter every week to that product. And as practitioners, if it's something you want to market to your clients, it's a great thing for you to do as a little extra affiliate income. Just contact her office and they'll get you set up as an affiliate so you can, you know, really get the word out about it. But our topic today, this is part of our reproductive module. We'll eventually have a link to it when we have that module going. But this is some advanced strategies and reproductive reproductive assessments and reproductive protocols, PMS and perimenopause, and all those things that you're going to see a lot in your practice, a lot. And, you know, as an OBGYN and a functional medicine doctor, Dr. Kubecka has more experience in this than most people that I know. And plus, like I said, I love her way of presenting. She and I were at a conference over the weekend, and she presented an awesome talk on oxytocin and connection. And she just really knows how to present things in a way that's easy to understand and stuff that can be applicable in your practice. So without further ado, hello, Anna, and thank you so much for being here.
Hello, Dr. Rita Marie. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here with all of you, and I see a couple of familiar people on as well. So really, it's great to be here. And I'm excited because you have it in an interactive forum, and I just want to let everyone know we're taking questions, and you want to run some cases by. I'm so excited to do that. I feel like a lot of learning happens there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So do you like to be called Dr. Anna, Dr. Kubecka? How should...
Just call me Anna or Dr. Anna. That's perfect.
Anna. Okay. So Dr. Anna has provided us with a really awesome set of slides, and I put the link up there. So towards the top of the chat there, you can just go ahead and click on that. We'll eventually download that and it'll be there. And we also have some other links to her site, which I'll be putting up through the chat as we go along. So go for it.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and share my slides, right? I'm using this really cool technology. So, you know, today our topic is reproductive hormonal issues and treating mood disorders associated with PMS and perimenopause. Yeah, so you have the slides, but basically, you know, we're going to talk and do Q&A, and I'm going to give you some case examples. But, you know, as Rita Marie introduced me, I trained at Emory University. I saw there's another Emory grad online. Excited to have you here. I also did board certification in anti-aging and regenerative medicine, and have spent since 2004 studying functional medicine, age management medicine, hormonal therapies, and sexual health. So that's been my area of expertise. And today I really want to talk about how we empower our body, spirit, and mind to create balance and health. And the changes in our lives, hormonal changes that can trigger either trigger transition, and we can make it easy on our bodies or it can be difficult on our bodies. So I share with you a little story of myself before, and I show you a picture of me over 200 pounds and also a picture of me with tremendous temporal hair loss. So I had this huge amount of hair loss at my, you know, at the crown of my head and around the temples of my head, and it was stress-related hair loss, not thyroid-related hair loss, but stress-related hair loss. So I learned a lot about, you know, weight loss resistance, the effects of stress, and the effects of trauma. And at 40 years old, I was diagnosed as premature ovarian failure, complete menopause and infertility, that I would never be able to have another child. And this, you know, stemmed from a woman who had been a workaholic, juggling all the hats that we juggle, right? Mom and chauffeur and researcher and physician. And I had two medical offices and a medical spa and a nurse practitioner and, you know, busy OBGYN practice and trying to juggle it all on my own. And then we had a significant family tragedy that just rocked us to our core and put us into the state of devastation and trauma. And I closed my medical practice for a year and we traveled around the world, and that I call my healing journey. And that's why I've integrated so many aspects of integrative medicine, world medicine, into my practice, as well as natural herbals and medicine, because I was, you know, told that, you know, I needed to be on an antidepressant. The only way I could possibly have a chance to have another child would be by egg donation. And, you know, and that's devastating. It was devastating to us, to me and my husband at the time. It really devastated us. And so there's a saying from Aristotle that says the soul suffers when the body is diseased or traumatized, while the body suffers when the soul is ailing. So I worked with the kind of natural medicines and, you know, all the things we know in functional medicine, detoxification and healing my gut and eliminating food sensitivities and balancing my hormones and spiritual growth. And you know, at the result, I became fertile again and totally reversed my menopause. But even better than that, you know, have given birth to my beautiful daughter, Ava, who's truly the princess of our lives and is, you know, a blessing to us. And also beyond that, you know, the fact that was able to completely reverse menopause. And that's so key, because not, you know, we can go through life changes, but that our body can recuperate, our body can heal. So I always say to my patients, no matter where you are at right now, your body can heal. And that's so important to understand, that no matter where we are, you know, if we can see it, if we can visualize it, I really believe that we can attain it. And, you know, our body is, I say, the temple of our spirit. It's a mechanism for our growth spiritually and enlightenment. But what we do as physicians, as a nutritionist, as functional medicine providers, is we work at the foundational level to really catapult healing. And that's so key. I experienced it in my life and thousands of patients. And in this way, we do a head-to-toe approach. So there's really several components of my assessment. I would say there's seven assessment areas that I'm going to give in my, you know, your assessment and plan on a patient after your full history and physical evaluation. You do an assessment and plan. And these are the seven areas that always are addressed in our assessment and plan. So, you know, first assessment, mind, spirits, and energetics. The second, environment. The third, nutrition. The fourth, digestion and intestinal health. The fifth, detoxification. Sixth is hormonal health and balance. I put sexual health in here too. And seven is structure and function. So for each of these areas, there's a assessment and plan that I put into place for an individual, for a patient. And, you know, all of these aspects at some time or other will be the feature focus of the visit. But we know from functional medicine and genetic studies that 75% of the individual's health after age 40 is dependent on what the person has done to his or her genes, not necessarily the genes themselves. And this, looking at twin studies or prior to our breaking and understanding of the genetic code, we really recognize now more than ever the epigenetics, right? The effect of our environment on our genes reflecting upon our determination of what our health is going to be like. So it's really important to empower our bodies in the right amounts. And we call this, you know, orthomolecular medicine, which is functional medicine, based on the principles that everyone is different and each individual's health benefits from having the right molecules in the right amounts, and that before turning to medicines, we should attempt to adjust the normal body constituents to match the needs for optimal functioning. And bottom line is it creates a system in which we need to focus on individualized care because we are each unique. Our story is unique. Our history is unique. But there's certain keys to our history that will help us develop an individualized treatment plan because we are each unique. And that's why individualized treatment plans include looking at the physical, the physiological, the biochemical, and the spiritual components, and how they all interrelate. It's important to recognize too with the with functional medicine, with what we're doing in medicine and how medicine has been evolving. It's important to recognize that that when it comes down to cellular health, the critical importance of that, because what we see with Alzheimer's, with dementia, with in issues of intestinal permeability, with cardiovascular issue, is this leaky cell membrane, right? It comes down to a leaky cell membrane break or in the integrity of our gap junctions, and things that shouldn't be going through are going through, and that creates this cascade of reactions in our body that affect our immune system, neuroendocrine system, and the list goes on. We see that. So if we know, okay, well, what can I do to support normal, healthy cellular membrane function and ATP generation for energy, etc., we really do work at these micronutrient level, at the importance of healthy fats, the importance of being aware of the chemicals, GMOs, etc., that we are exposed to, as well as detoxifying. So that leads us back, to more creative medicine than we initially are trained to undertake in medical school, right? Here's your prescription, here's your surgery schedule, and go to it. But it's very different now, and recognizing that is so important, especially when it comes to understanding that really, I would say over 90% of disease relates to inflammation and hormone imbalance. And if we add in adrenal dysfunction, I really believe we're at 99%. We address these three core issues, it's like pouring a new foundation, right, for a building. You're pouring a new foundation, and you're going to just fill in all the gaps, make sure it's good and level, and go from there. But when we address, I call it the devil's triad, inflammation, hormone imbalance, and adrenal dysfunction, we address those three areas, and we're going to eliminate a lot of these diseases here. Diabetes, or anything with itis is inflammation. So we have arthritis, endometritis, diverticulitis. I mean, just name on. And we know diabetes mellitus is an inflammatory disease. Alzheimer's, cognitive decline, dementia, all inflammatory disease, cardiovascular disease, stroke, cancer. And that leads us to PMS, depression, obesity, all of those factors as well. And it's important because our clients, I don't know what clientele each of you have, but in general, we're approaching over half the U.S. population age 40 and above, and we're extreme, aging population. The bell curve is shifting. And so we look at the time of menopause, a woman's average life expectancy is 32.7 years. And of the health concerns, we see that osteoporotic fracture comes 1 in 2, coronary heart disease is 1 in 3, stroke or Alzheimer's is 1 in 5, chance for these, diseases, and 1 in 8 for breast cancer. So, even more than that, creating we're seeing our next generations not as healthy as our generations, and we are leading this bell curve. So we've got to shift it to be a very conscientious and address these issues: inflammation, hormone imbalance, and adrenal dysfunction. And so with your clientele population, we're going to see the most important time to interact, and this is when they come in to see you, is when they're having issues with PMS or the perimenopause issues. And so, just a basic overview, because I know some aren't physicians on the line, but in our menstrual cycle, at the beginning is cycle day 1. And I always emphasize this even to a room full of OBGYNs, but I really want to be clear that our first day of bleeding is cycle day number 1, right? That's the first day of bleeding. And that's when our hormone levels are pretty even keel. And typically when we're not so symptomatic, we've just had our period or starting to bleed and hormones have dropped and they're pretty stable at this point. You know, come day, you know, preparing for ovulation somewhere between day 12 to 14, 11 to 13, depending on a cycle day, whichever that may be, 28 day, 30, 40 day cycle, whatever is unique to that individual. You know, we look at ovulation somewhere typically between day 12 to 14, but we're going to then see a peak in estrogen first. Around day 21, we see a peak in progesterone, a little bump up in estrogen too. But when we're checking hormones, we want to check peak hormone levels here at day 21. We want to check baseline levels here at day one. So that's important to recognize, because if someone comes in and they said, yeah, my doctor checked my labs, and you're like, well, what day of the cycle were you? And you're day 10. I mean, what's that going to tell me? And it's not going to tell me much. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we want to know when in your cycle you're having and your labs done. And then in the menopause, perimenopause, when in relation to the time you took your hormone therapy, or, you know, how long has it been since your cycle? Was there any breakthrough bleeding, et cetera? And this is important to know, because we'll see breakthrough bleeding around day 14 to 21 because we're not building healthy levels of progesterone. And that tells me we need to intervene with some progesterone or spotting for several days before a full-blown period. You're not getting enough levels of progesterone. So that's important to know, because progesterone is a mother hormone that affects cognition, affects memory, affects bone loss, affects healthy breast, helps balance estrogen dominance, and is important for our neurotransmitter GABA, the calm and ease. And this is in this area where we see some pretty significant PMS symptoms. So in just review, you know, PMS has hundreds of symptoms diagnosed with, and I always joke, it's because our writers of these gynecologic endocrinology books are men, and they just want to blame everything on PMS, and they have no responsibility. But you know, I mean, we do really with PMS, when the hormone, and basically PMS, premenstrual syndrome, are your hormones are out of balance, bottom line. You know, we've got to figure out, okay, what's the underlying issue that's causing the hormones to be out of balance? And that's key, whether it's, you know, an understanding there's different types of PMS symptoms. Is it from edema, like with a, you know, swollen breast, you know, swollen ankles, you know, 3-5 pound weight gain? Is it from just inflammatory reasons? Is it irritability? Is it depression? And you know, what is the symptoms telling us about the underlying reason to PMS? PMS is a cry for help, okay? And that's how we need to look at it. And then again, you know, let's get to the bottom, and I'll go through it with you. So currently, according to the U.S. Bureau of the Census, women age 45 to 64, who are our most symptomatic clients at this time, are constituted over 26% of the female population right now. So just an interesting barroom conversation. So let me introduce to you Zoe, who's a 36-year-old female. She came to see me complaining of PMS, moodiness, breast tenderness, having difficulty organizing tasks. She had memory loss and decreased libido. She was 5 feet 11 inches, 155 pounds, so slim, athletic. She had 4 children. And she managed all the kids' activities, very active family, soccer mom, plus managed the books for her husband's business, and just said, I just can't get things done like I used to get done. No sex drive, felt like, you know, just can't remember anymore. And those were issues. So on physical examination, she had fibrocystic breasts bilaterally, and this 36-year-old woman had signs of estrogen deficiency. Her areola and vaginal mucosa were very pale. So I had to think, okay, what's going on? So here's an example. Here's her salivary test that we did, which looked at her progesterone level on day 21 of her cycle. Again, you know, this patient was very good about getting these labs done at the time that I requested her. So exactly day 21 of her cycle, and her progesterone level was significantly low. I really like to see it in the couple hundreds in a menstruating female. And her testosterone was on the low side of normal. So for me, her DHEA was significantly low, and that's important to recognize because that's our adrenal component, right? So here we see estrogen dominance and adrenal insufficiency. She's like crashing into bed at night with low cortisol. Her morning cortisol was okay, but on the low range, I'd like to see it better than 10. So for morning cortisol. So this was a picture of someone, and this is what's happening. Here we could see the labs and say, okay, well, here's some hormonal imbalance. And by now you probably have someone come into your office with these complaints, and you can say, you know, estrogen dominance, adrenal fatigue, without running these labs. But we've got this idea, and it's also important to know that, you know, there's often after we've had two children, that, you know, our life is busy. We're multitasking constantly. We're in this heightened sense of awareness. So we're in a state of constant alert, and that does tax our adrenals and does tax our hormonal balance. So it can deplete our levels of testosterone and DHEA. So recognizing that too in busy moms as well. And so I went on to continue. So I had this piece of the puzzle. We also wanted to do some more functional medicine. So I did the women's health profile, which was by Metametrics at the time I did this. I actually had created this panel. I put this panel together with Metametrics. I said, I want something for women. You know, I was thinking in the who are getting pregnant, planning to be pregnant or pregnant, what are things I need to know for their future risk of disease or a healthy pregnancy, healthy baby. I started using this panel together in women and men because we look at these components, insulin sensitivity. She did perfect here, was great. Estrogen metabolism, looking at her detoxification of estrogen metabolites. This is before they were doing 4 hydroxy and methoxy estrogen ratios, which are really important to see how is your body detoxifying and what can we do to boost it up? Do we need to add DIM? Do you just need to increase your diet of cruciferous vegetables and increase some omegas or some fresh ground flax seeds into your protein smoothies? I mean, some lifestyle things. We're going to do that first, right? So her ratio was a little bit low, and this is awesome because I can be very proactive in her health. And then it continues to show us nitric oxide regulation and the omega-3 balance. So we look at our EPA, which is here as the number 12, pentanoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid. And then we also look at inflammatory omega-6s, right? So that's the arachidonic acid and the AA-EPA ratio. So showing inflammation right here. We know it. But this proved it, and this helps a patient being compliant. Okay, well, maybe I need to work with stress management. Maybe I need to add some omega-3s. Maybe I need to, so this gives us some key points of intervention, right? And so that's a beautiful thing to have. The next part is looking at cell membrane oxidation, so lipid peroxides, which were fine, and red blood cell points, magnesium and zinc, both low. We need magnesium and zinc in, pretty much every aspect of our body, right? We needed it pretty much every process, metabolic pathway. That's, we just need these elements, and it's so important. We know zinc can be preventative for cancer, and magnesium is important for neurotransmitters and hormones, and the list goes on. So here, showing her too, looking at and say, okay, your red blood cell levels are showing that you're having these nutrient deficiencies. You're burning the candle at both ends, and we really need to focus on nutrition. That also gives you the argument. This is why we like organic, farm-raised, slow food, foods that grown locally, etc., because of the nutritional. We want things that have a higher nutritional value. Doing the best you can do as a busy mom, but we need to do more, and this shows you that. And then of course organic acids and ATP production and looking at B vitamin sufficiency, cellular energy. So this is looking basically at the Krebs cycle markers and gives us a point to say, okay, we need to maybe do some more support in one area or another and how important that is. So the reason I would do this testing in patients is to help, create the individualized treatment plan, but also to create the understanding of the reasons the recommendations are being made. So you're going to recommend the core things all the time, but sometimes we need this extra proof. And you know, certainly early on in my practice, I was relying more heavily on testing than I do now because of just the clinical expertise that I've gained. But it does help, you know, to help guide a patient into fully understanding the reasons for very specific guided recommendations. Often when you correct the things you know you need to correct at the beginning, their symptoms go away, they feel better, they have better energy, the hormones are balanced, and there's not so much as much testing or frequency of testing that you may need to do. But organic acids is key. This is now testing that Genova has taken over since Metametrics. But I also look at neural functioning. Again, PMS is a mood disorder. And this shows, you know, in this slide, we're looking at kind of like putting the pedal to the metal. She has the vanillamandinate, which was elevated. And that's our norepinephrine pathway. And so it says, okay, we got to do better on stress management, saying no, having time for your, having downtime or, you know, pleasure time so that you can refill your tanks. And then, you know, here we have homovanillinate. That's a marker for dopamine. 5-hydroxyindolacetate is a marker for serotonin. Kynurate is a marker for B6. So could tell her and her specific interest is that we just could add a little B6 or just take, you know, a good, you know, I would recommend a healthy B vitamin combination with methylated B vitamins. So that was like what the testing helped. So we do the TLCs, therapeutic lifestyle changes, make dietary recommendations, begin a detox program, which typically I have them doing while we're waiting on test results. From day one, they come in, they would get you know, first steps recommendation, which included a detox program. I started her on progesterone cream, 60 milligrams, only a half mil on cycle day 10 through 28. Typically now I use our Pure Balance progesterone cream, which has 20 milligrams of progesterone and 10 milligrams of pregnenolone and one pump at bedtime. And that can make a huge difference. We want to make sure we're using USP grade progesterone, any hormone that we're using. And I also supplemented with DHEA to support her adrenals and, you know, multivitamin packs. I added some extra omegas and carnitine and magnesium glycinates, 50 milligrams of zinc, glycine and N-acetylcysteine, vitamin C, vitamin E, iodide because of the fibrocystic breast. I would use that very short term, and knowing that she didn't have any thyroid antibodies would be the reason I use iodine. There's so much controversy with using iodine. I think that it's for a short instance of time, small doses is perfect. This is a hefty dose in my clinical practice. However, when I'm treating fibrocystic breast and ovarian cyst, I would do it quickly because when I see them back in 6 weeks, I reevaluate. And typically the symptoms are completely gone, ovarian cyst gone, fibrocystic breast gone, and that's critical. Then we would go down to just what was in their nutrition or recommending, you know, of course, the dietary changes to add natural iodine as needed. But that's something where, you know, I don't recommend higher doses of iodine. It's pretty key. And I would also, at this point, you know, continue adrenal support with Mighty Maca greens. And then I would just follow her up in 6 weeks after that. And so what's really important, when she came back 6 weeks later, apparently I don't have that. Do I have that slide on here? I don't have her slide on here. But when she came back 6 weeks later, what she said is her daughter said, "Mommy, you're your old self back. You're laughing again." And that's the one thing that she said. She says, "I felt so out of it," as well as had initiated sex, which she hadn't done in years at that point. And that's just a general sense of overall well-being. Her family benefit, a stronger connection to her husband, strong connection to her children, and all this because she was estrogen dominant, adrenal fatigue. We needed to primarily make some therapeutic lifestyle changes, add a little bit of hormone. Now I can take a question now, if there's a question now, and then come back to my slides.
Mm-hmm. So if anybody has any questions, you want to go ahead and type them in. And I just wanted to let everybody know, thank you for all this because it's really detailed. For those of you who haven't run organic acid tests, we have a whole module in NEPT on organic acid tests. So you'll get all the different details. So you'll be really good at reading those. And we'll be going through the estrogen pathway tests. And so we'll have, there's modules in NEPT on all of that to go back in detail. And if you remember, module 2 is all about the Krebs cycle. So as you see, you know, clinical presentations of how we use this clinically, you'll go back and say, oh, that's why we're learning all the basics of Krebs cycle. Because when you learn it in medical school, you didn't learn all of the, you know, B vitamins were important. You didn't learn the role of niacin and the various, you know, amino acids in the Krebs cycle. You just said, this is the Krebs cycle. This is what happens. You have to memorize all these chemicals, but nobody made the connection back to how you can teach your clients, patients, how to deal with it nutritionally, right? So as we go through those organic acid tests, you're going to see that. So thank you so much for pulling that in and letting us see this in clinical practice. So if anybody has questions, go ahead, type them in. If not, we'll just keep going. And I'm not seeing any questions come in. So why don't you go ahead and keep going? And if any questions come in, we'll take another break.
Okay, excellent. So can you see the slide okay?
Yep, the symptoms of estrogen dominance.
Yep, that's it. So we talk about symptoms of estrogen dominance. As I showed you in my client Zoe, she came in with mood swings, irritability, depression. I mean, this long list of symptoms, right? So typically a patient would come to me, right? The standard of care way to handle this patient, a little different than what I showed you, right? So typically a patient comes into her GYN's office, or family practice office, I'm having mood swings, irritable, depressed, not feeling as well as I used to feel. My periods are irregular. I'm having breakthrough bleeding at the same time, maybe increased cramping. And what's the treatment? First thing, well, let's just handle your depression, irritability, these mood swings. Let's put you on some Prozac. And for your regular periods, let's get you on some birth control pills. And we'll just knock out your period, stabilize your hormone. Between these two, this is like gold. Well, the patient comes in. Now she, you know, she's still having maybe some breakthrough bleeding or some PMS, but it's a little bit better. But the cramping is strong and she's having the side effects of the birth control pills with decreased libido, no sex drive, not really feeling her lows anymore, but not feeling any highs either. And then she's continuing to have breakthrough bleeding and spotting. So what do we do next? Well, okay, we can take care of that. Let's do a surgery. And since you're 40, let's go ahead and take out your ovaries while we're taking out your uterus because we don't want you to have ovarian cancer, right? Forget about the fact that the 65-year-old plus ovary is still producing levels of testosterone and other hormones and is a part of a significant feedback loop. But that's not standard awareness. So now she's had Prozac, OCPs, and now she's still needs her Prozac and she's had her hysterectomy. She's now complaining of vaginal dryness, continues to have weight gain now around the middle. She feels like she definitely has less sex drive, may have hair loss, dry, thin, wrinkly skin, and some short-term memory loss. In fact, she doesn't remember the last time she had sex, and that's not because of her memory loss, right? We got some things going on here. So what happens next? You know, it leads to relationship strife, a sense that you're not in your own body, a disconnect and divorce. I mean, that's, you know, I'm tongue in cheek here, but you see what's going on. There's a pattern, and I saw it in my practices and my clients' practices in my education system. You know, I mean, this is what we have to treat. This is what's on the prescription. This is what's on the knife. And then after that, she's a psychiatric patient, right? Well, we did everything we could from the gynecologic standpoint. I can't help you anymore. So, you know, you need a counselor. And it's very, very sad. And then then we've got the breast issues and, you know, I mean, just the list of bone issues, right? And the list goes on. But especially as primary care providers, we have such an advantage to be able to see early on in their 20s and 30s what their body is telling us is what's out of balance. What are the signs and symptoms of inflammation? What are the signs and symptoms of hormone imbalance? And how we get to the bottom of it. Because in the early 30s, our hormone levels, testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone, are all starting to drop.
And we have a few questions. So if you want to stop here, that's great. If you want to keep going, that's fine too.
Okay. Let's go ahead with the questions.
Okay. I have Michelle says, I'm still menstruating, have been dealing with excessive bleeding, started your Mighty Maca and end of October after Shine. and my periods are becoming more balanced, not bleeding all month. My cycle is 26 days long. I experience significant low back pain about day 18 to 21. Would that be a sign of low progesterone?
It could be. Tell me how old you are, and also have you had any, have you had a chiropractic evaluation, some manipulation for the back pain, a pelvic ultrasound? Is there a fibroid?
Everything done. She's had everything done. MRIs, ultrasounds. She's had x-rays. She's had everything done, chiropractic, she's done lots and lots of stuff, and nobody could find anything.
I would add progesterone, because that's a stimulus, you know, that you're getting either pudendal nerve stimulation or with the sacrum, but I would add progesterone. And if you're doing a couple scoops a day of the Mighty Maca, that should be good. If you're doing one, I would do two, and add progesterone cream. We use the Pure Balance, which is on my website. It's 20 milligrams of USP progesterone and 10 milligrams of pregnenolone. And I would feel that would be very good. And again, supporting your adrenals, definitely getting into yoga and some inversions, and see if there's not maybe an impingement based on, you know, where the uterus is position. And there may be some pelvic floor therapist that could do some manipulation. Like what I find sometimes is that there's psoas muscle tenderness on the inside, like the vaginal lateral walls. And just by applying, you know, if you have a good osteopath who can do that, or chiropractor that can do that, or physical therapist that knows how to do some internal psoas muscle release, oh, that can just change your life, especially if you've been sedentary, if you have a sedentary work job, you take a train to work or whatever the situation may be, you really want to work on relaxation of those muscles. So that can make a big difference. So we see that a lot in with pelvic health, but I would definitely boost up some progesterone and maybe increase some anti-inflammatories, flexibility exercises, all of that.
Yeah, she said her hormone testing showed both low progesterone and estrogen, and that she just started taking the Beswecan Progon B drops 10 days to when I start my period.
Okay. I haven't used those, so I don't know, but okay, good. And you've already done some internal pelvic floor therapy. Yeah, I would add the progesterone, and then just definitely some yoga. Some things that I just had clients do, especially with low back pain when it's cyclical, is, you know, it's just like we do it for a sciatic nerve stretch. It's just squat against, you know, the squat. Like the rest of the world does this to use the bathroom, right? They squat down and they're using a hole for their bathroom. Well, that just is a good, huge stretch. And you could just sit against the wall and stretch that way. It's like a deep squat. Your feet are flat, spread apart. And it's just a deep, we've lost Rita Marie to the squat. It's just this deep squat. And that is perfect to work with that exercise, and then just and supporting, you know, definitely supporting the hormonal balance. And when we do the up, down, you know, top to bottom support, that can make a big difference, Michelle, in the whole feedback system. So you should see progesterone is one of the hormones of relaxation as well for muscles, right? That's why we're able to stretch in like a metamorphic way when we're pregnant. You know, progesterone is one of the and that's one of the benefits of progesterone. So I would do those things definitely, and let me know how you do. Give it 6 to 8, you know, 3 months. I usually tell patients, let's do this 3 months. Maybe if you can do 10 to 20 minutes a day of those, that squat, just like, you know, watching a movie, reading a book, you know, just somehow really work on that just beautiful balance stretch and see where that gets you.
Okay. And she does have adrenal exhaustion. And I don't know, Michelle, if you're already doing pregnenolone, but the combination pregnenolone progesterone that Anna talked about on their site could be a good thing to try. Do you just a question for you as far as application of those hormones? Transmucosal is supposed to be the best. Is that how you usually do it? Have them apply vaginally or vulva or anal mucosa?
With like when I'm typically starting out and using what I can over the counter, so the progesterone, pregnenolone, It's a cream, but using it around the labia and vulva because it's so vascular, that's perfect there. When I'm prescribing hormones, the way to do those is a troche, and that will dissolve between the cheek and gum. I like that because I break the troches. I get the square troches, and I would have clients break them into four. Sometimes they need a half of one. Sometimes they need a fourth of one on twice a day, or sometimes we need to insert it into the vagina versus dissolving between the cheek and gum. So that gave me a tremendous amount of flexibility in how I'm using it. Plus, when I do it submucosally like that through the cheek and gum or the vagina, I see it in the blood and I'm testing and evaluating based on that. Creams, we're not going to see in the blood so much, but a little bit goes a long way, and I know how we're getting the feedback, and typically we'll see good results very quickly too with a good USP cream, progesterone and pregnenolone.
One more question from Sarah. And she said she has a client with low DHEA, less than 0.189, and normal cortisol. Her cortisol DHEA ratio is 144. She's 44 years old, has a healthy lifestyle. She's a digestion coach, follows paleo diet, denies any stress other than being a worrier, and sometimes, and then states the only symptom she has of adrenal fatigue.
Okay, and that's
low libido. She can't find any answers to why her DHEA is that low.
Did she have childhood trauma? She's 44. Did she have childhood trauma?
Childhood trauma could be one. Yeah, we'll see what she says.
Post-traumatic stress disorder, childhood trauma, and this creeping up at 44, progesterone, pregnenolone's low. I definitely would use progesterone, pregnenolone. I'd put her on Mighty Maca. I would work with, because her cortisol levels are normal. Yeah, I would work with supporting her DHEA, progesterone, pregnenolone. What were her testosterone levels? Maybe a little bit of testosterone.
Yeah, and then I it comes to me as like when somebody says, well, they don't have any obvious signs of stress, I would be looking at hidden physiologic stress. So a hidden infection somewhere. You can look at her CBC, first of all, to see if there's some signs there of, white blood cell problems, low or high. Actually, you could do that. Monocytes being low or high would indicate a chronic infection. Anything in the basophil, eosinophil area on the PBC, and then maybe look at gut stuff. There may be a hidden H. pylori or just an intestinal infection that's not symptomatic intestinally, but's causing a dip in her hormones. Because DHEA is so dependent on microbiome. So you can shift your DHEA levels dramatically by having out of balance microbiome. So
I agree. And I think what we see too often is that, when I have someone who's, I can't bump up her DHEA, I definitely do work with the Mighty Maca formula. I've seen that increase it, the progesterone, pregnenolone, but probiotics, heart math, or maybe there is something that's unresolved. I see that in unresolved trauma. If I can't figure out like that worrier, where is it stemming from? EMDR, emotional freedom technique, heart math, good sleep. That's another thing that will suppress our DHEA. Good sleep, but certainly gotta address the gut as functional medicine providers, right? Those are the first things that we look at. We want to address that. Is there a food sensitivity? Is there something else that could be irritating? But I would suspect we've got a post-traumatic issue or some childhood stress or something maybe that's lingering, that would be lingering there, that's now coming out because progesterone and pregnenolone are low, and we tend to resurface this autonomic overdrive. So we see this autonomic overdrive. Right now she's pumping out good cortisol. You said her cortisol levels are normal, but they may drop. And then her oxytocin or sense of connection may drop too, maybe struggling. Yeah. So she may be burnt out, and that's why we're seeing that. And so those are definitely areas to look at, Sarah, when you're working with her.
Yeah, and she adds that
she has very low testosterone, 16.8, and H. pylori. I would definitely work on supporting those adrenals, continue to support those, and heal her GI tract. I mean, H. pylori can be preventative or protective, right? So, but adding on some healthy probiotics and fermented foods may also help her. Check on how she's sleeping, check, emotional freedom technique, her sleep, heart map, and something else is going on to keep that dry, you know, keep that down.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So let me, I'll go ahead and show you some more of these slides.
Okay. One quick question. Could hormone therapy be a temporary fix until you're able to work on getting the body to produce and balance hormones on its own? I think that's a really great question.
Yeah, I agree. I think absolutely we should really work on optimizing the body. And what I find out when you get your body in a beautiful alkaline state, you're at a peak metabolism, you're burning energy, you're burning fat well, you're making energy well, that the hormones you need, if any, will be very little. What I find in our industrial society and with our levels of toxicity, and I live on an island in Southeast Georgia. I don't know if you can see our beautiful sunset coming out right now, but we're getting close to our sunset, and it's just beautiful out here. But I'm on the marsh. But we have one of the highest rates of cancer. We're off of 95, and we have 6 Superfund sites in Georgia, and our water is not safe to drink. So what I find is toxicity to be a really big issue. We need to protect our brain from the toxins, and progesterone and adrenaline are part of that protection. So I tend to use it very rarely during that supplement with even low doses of progesterone or pregnenolone. Plus, you see the incontinence, the rows and rows of incontinence pads in our grocery stores and everywhere, department stores, et cetera, with the rows and rows of incontinence pads. That's because of vaginal dryness, you know, loss of collagen, muscle weakness, and, you know, loss of vaginal integrity. Well, we need, using progesterone, pregnenolone, or vaginal hormones, or my Vulvar cream that's coming out with alpine rose stem cells and DHEA, is it will help strengthen the muscle of the vagina, help strengthen the muscle around the urethra, and that will help support. So, well, you know, my 82-year-old patient who's on hormone therapy, taking a little bit vaginally, has kept her out of harm's way, and I think that's really key. And you know, again, I think about incontinence. I'm going on a tangent now. When we need it. I remember one day I did 6 sling procedures in one day, and you know, I batched them for that 1 month. But I started using vaginal hormone therapy. I hadn't had to do another sling procedure on a patient. And then I'd have patients come to me after slings with erosion of the mesh and sutures coming out and continued pain and discomfort. I'd use vaginal hormone therapy. Tremendous amount of improvement. So that's key. So we want to be preventive and proactive. And I think if we lived on the island of Bali and north, you know, north of Ubud, I don't think we'd need any. But yet here, I believe that we got to use those protective hormones until our environment gets cleaned up, until we're completely non-GMO, until our air is toxin-free and our water is safe to swim in and drink from the tap. But so there are those issues. If we're doing all that, no, I think it's fine. I still may recommend for a woman to have a little bit of Vulvar cream, you know, DHEA cream, because just incontinence is not fun, and it affects our quality of life, makes us less want to exercise, less want to have sex, you know, vaginal dryness, creates pain, and that's an issue. You know, it's really an issue for quality of life. So as a gynecologist doing pelvic exams where you can't, you know, I mean, the tissue is so fragile, it's painful. And I don't want anyone to suffer that way. We can reverse that in very short amount of time. So I would encourage y'all, I think when I do, I've been working on my vulvar cream for a couple of years now because it's been very OCD about what I do, but what, you know, it's very specific because I want to regenerate that muscular tissue that, you know, really improve the vaginal health, but through a vulvar cream, so it's accessible to everyone. And I still encourage physicians to write vaginal hormone therapy because we can do a lot of good in, you know, we can do a lot of good in preventative, preventing incontinence, preventing vaginal dryness, keeping the vagina healthy, etc. And with just a little bit of vaginal hormone therapy. Of course, we need to do all those other things in functional medicine, healthy omegas, right? Improve the cell membrane, good healthy probiotics. All that relates to the vaginal health too. When I lectured to a group of physicians, I said, you know, as a gynecologist, I can tell a lot about a person's health from the vagina. It's so true.
I bet. Okay. Well, you know, one last quick question. When you say vaginal hormone therapy, that's specific targeted based on their labs, a cream that's made up and targeted for them, or is there a generic cream that's good for, or is that why you're making the vulvars to make it available over the counter?
Yeah, I'm making the vulvar cream to have it available over the counter. I had created vaginal tablets, but then the FDA, because you take them sublingual DHEA, right? And that's fine, but you put that in the vagina, and I created it with a very specific pH balance so you didn't get yeast infection and everything else. But apparently the FDA didn't like that very much. They could shut us down because when you insert it in the vagina, it's a drug. And that's, you know.
You have to make it a vulvar even, and you can quite.
A vulvar cosmetic that may be safe to use in the vagina.
Safe to use in the vagina. You know, can I tell a funny story about your DHEA?
Yes.
So I got them. I said, oh, this sounds interesting. Let me just check this out and see what happens. So I started using your DHEA things, and I had been using them for several days, not that consistently, but maybe over the course of a week. My sex drive was through the roof. I would be sitting at my desk going, is he home yet? And, you know, I'd be like sneaking out in the middle of the day. And it was like crazy how quickly and effectively those things worked. So when you said they were taken off the market, I was like, oh, because I was, you know, oh my God, this did this to me. I didn't have problems with my sex drive. And I'm not sure. I think it might have created a problem with my sex drive, quite frankly, because it's crazy to have that high a sex drive. But I was like, all these people that I'm working with this low sex drive, and I started recommending it, and they'd go there and say, well, we can't get it anymore. So I'm so excited.
Oh, believe me, it did so much good. It broke my heart. My manufacturer wouldn't do it because the FTC, whatever, FDA could shut them down. And, you know, it would cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars to get the drug approval. So I wasn't able to. So I'm like, okay, a vulvar cosmetic, let's do it. It can make it even more inexpensive, very formula, and use smaller amounts. So those were 10 milligrams. But in 2 weeks, the vagina was 100% better. The beautiful thing of those, I had patients using it once or twice a week and had great results, right, with vaginal improvement of the rugation, the elasticity, lubrication, you know, vaginal fluids, et cetera. So all that really made a difference. So in this vulvar cream that I've been working and testing now for 2 years, over 2 years, is going to work very same way, but we're able to specifically adjust the dose, right? With the cream, we have a way, you know, a spectrum of how we can adjust it, but I still only want it concentrated enough that we're not applying globs of cream, and it's got to smell good, you know, be tasteless and all those things for our vulvar health. And so those are issues that not cause irritation, itching, and be regenerative. So that's the vulvar DHEA cream that's coming out now with some alpine rose stem cells in it for cellular regeneration as well. And it's really a beautiful thing. So I'm hoping that as long as it's a vulvar cosmetic, that we're going to get great, you know, continue to get great feedback from it.
Because we get, you know, we know that people with their, you know, by working on their renals, that's a tough process. I want to get the results as soon as they can.
And that will get quick results. So,
yeah. Great.
Okay. So back to the slides. You know, just to show you again, just kind of the hormonal changes that are happening as we age, hormonal changes from age 35 on, we really start to see a steep decline in progesterone. And that's where it really found, you know, that's when our risk of miscarriage increases, right? And I just use progesterone in patients over 35 preventatively. And if I'm checking their blood level, if it's anything less than optimal in pregnancy, you know, early pregnancy at time they come in for the pregnancy test, I'm putting them on vaginal progesterone suppositories. I'm not going to risk it. And then, and especially if they had a history of a miscarriage. So we're doing that. And then you know, we're seeing a decline in testosterone, a decline in estrogen, which is sharper in our 40s with the lability of the swings of estrogen, highs and lows as well. We feel maybe hot flashes and the mood swings, this kind of lability. So what we work with in using adrenal support or, you know, small amount of bioidentical hormones, but nutrition, detoxification, et cetera, when we are giving good nutrition, detoxifying, have a good, healthy bacteria within our gut, good, healthy microbiome, we're not going to get these crazy swings. We may do a little bit, but using, you know, covering those areas first, right? And then we use a little hormone therapy to kind of bring up the baseline so you're not as symptomatic. And, you know, I could go into a whole talk on hot flashes, which I've actually given before. Those are fun. But really understanding that, you know, as we age, we're seeing these different hormones and knowing that estrogen and progesterone both have a effect on our neurotransmitters. Estrogen modulates the activity of our serotonin production, which is really important, increases the serotonin receptors in the brain. And so we have more serotonin. So at this time, we're like, well, why are we having more anxiety? You know, maybe palpitations. Well, really, when you're hearing someone with arrhythmia palpitations, think micronutrients, think minerals, right? Think estrogen and hormone progesterone and hormone balance. And those palpitations will go away. You don't need a beta blocker. Let's get to the root of why those palpitations are happening. But we see this in the perimenopause, 40, 50, you know, going to the cardiologist with palpitations, et cetera. I mean, this is a hormone and nutritional insufficiency syndrome, not a beta blocker deficiency. And we really need to address those issues because it just leads to more problems the more we band-aid. So progesterone is like our GABA for the brain. I always say, you know, progesterone, to remember that it's like GABA, just think it's a mother hormone. Think of the musical Mamma Mia, the rock group ABBA. And it's like, oh, it's a good hormone. So progesterone. And how important that is. Your clients are coming to you with nutrient deficiencies. The nutrient deficiencies that are key in affecting hormones are these: iodine, zinc, B6, calcium, magnesium, your methyl donors, cobalt, chromium, and boron. So we need good multivitamin mineral support, and that's really important. Your patients have had a series of courses of antibiotics, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, and birth control pills, all causing nutrient deficiencies, especially in our folic acid. So methylated folate becomes a very easy supplemental addition. And let them know their MTHFR status, their gene status. It kind of increases compliance. You know, it increases compliance knowing that. So In general, with, you know, this is the standard of, I'm showing this slide as treatment option for the standard of care approach, what your patients are getting from the gynecologist for PMS, perimenopause, mood disorders. And we talked about birth control pills. Worst case, sometimes they're put on a GnRH agonist or they're giving long-term progesterone. Now, I do like the Mirena IUD as an option if we need it, right, for breakthrough bleeding, et cetera, and birth control. I prefer birth control being the Paragard IUD if we're using it, if we need birth control, because it's non-hormonal and easily reversible. Those are things to consider. Big things are the therapeutic lifestyle changes that we need to intervene with, right? The nutrition, the food, I mean, all the things that you know that Dr. Rita Marie emphasizes, the importance of food as medicine, food as information, and exercise and sleep. Those are crucially important. I do emphasize fiber, really aim for 50 grams of fiber a day, but I put 25 in here because if I get 25, I'm really, really happy. And I don't, you know, I'm like, okay, we're aiming for 50 grams of fiber a day, but adding a tablespoon of fresh ground flaxseed in their morning green smoothies, hugely beneficial. Get them started on a morning smoothie a day. Let them put some fresh ground flaxseed in it, not flaxseed oil. I don't know how long I've been saying this, not the oil, the fresh ground flaxseed, and, you know, add a scoop or two of Mighty Maca, add a handful of kale, or, you know, a handful of blueberries, almond butter, water, you know, mix it up. Like, get started with a good, healthy smoothie, green smoothie in the morning, a scoop of protein powder in there, a tablespoon of MCT oil or coconut oil, and just get them started off good in the morning. And that so helps with hormonal balance and sets the stage for a nutrient-rich day that they can pull from versus out the door with a cup of coffee. So that's important. I always say, you know, we're really emphasizing how important it is to have a healthy healthy fat and proteins. You know, when we're talking about healthy fats, we want to encourage healthy fats and good protein and really restrict carbohydrates, especially refined carbohydrates. We know definitely, especially with PMS and perimenopause mood disorders, like if you have a liquid B6, a couple drops in the evening before bedtime will help them get a good night's sleep. I want them to get calcium from their diet. The research shows that calcium helps with PMS, but we want to get it from their diet. So as much as possible, I don't supplement with additional calcium, but it's something to consider. Make sure they're getting calcium-rich grains and food in their diet. And then the B6, adding that at bedtime can be hugely beneficial to help them get a good night's sleep. That with a pump of progesterone at bedtime, they're getting a good night's sleep that allows the body to restore. So some of the herbs, et cetera, that I use with patients, always I give omega, krill, GLA, especially if they have, so blackcurrant oil or evening primrose oil, that's GLA, gamma linoleic acid, and that really helps with fibrocystic breast and PMS. So we need to remember that that can be tremendously beneficial. And I love krill oil as well. I would not give them all, but I may take seasons, like let's start with omegas and rotate in krills, let's rotate in GLA. But if they're fibrocystic, initially when they're coming to me, I'll put them on a good, you know, blackcurrant oil or evening primrose oil. Make sure most of my patients, when I tested them, magnesium and zinc deficient. I use something on my website. It's at drannakabeka.com, the wellness store. That it's my PMS, my pure menstrual support. It has chaseberry in it as well as some other herbs in it as well, some Chinese herbs. But chaseberry, 100 milligrams a day, is a great add for helping naturally balance progesterone levels, helps with PMS, dysmenorrhea, you know, painful periods. That will be beneficial as well, and support their adrenals. So that's key too. We also look at, you know, for nervous system support, adding 5-HTP to build up serotonin if needed, add some L-tryptophan at bedtime or L-tryptophan at bedtime. I typically would use 5-HTP and 50 to 100 milligrams at bedtime and start there with the B6, with the additional B6 and a pump of progesterone. Get them a good night's sleep, you know, give their body some cofactors to help with repair and restoration, and that can make a big difference. And natural anti-inflammatories, you know, turmeric, resveratrol, grapeseed extract, all of those are in the Mighty Maca formulation. You can add DIM for breast health and breast support. If I have someone with a low 2:4:16 ratio and imbalanced ratio, I add DIM support. And then of course you're going to detoxify. Other things that I use now, I use our Pure Snooze, which is a sublingual melatonin. I really like that formula. It helps tremendously. It's a 3 milligram sublingual, and you can break it in half. So most people don't need the full one, but you can go up to 20, and you can go up to 20 milligrams of melatonin if needed, especially my breast cancer patients. I'm going to have them on a higher dose of melatonin, 20 milligrams at bedtime. But in general for us, you know, 0.5 to 3 milligrams of melatonin sublingual, very good healthy dose. Inositol is another supplement that we use for sleep that's very beneficial. Rita Marie and I did a little video on Mighty Maca, and I recommend that y'all watch that. You'll hear more about our combination of Mighty Maca, but there's a lot of research on maca and controversy. But what would have seen in our practice that it helps so much in the perimenopause, menopause, andropause, it's a recovery adrenal adaptogen formula, right? Maca in general is, but in Mighty Maca, I added 42 ingredients because I want to attack that devil's triangle, the triad, right? The hormone imbalance, the inflammation, the adrenal fatigue, by igniting the cytokine pathways and really helping to restore anti-inflammatory state when we need it. So that's important. And this is, I talked about DIM in patients with breast cancer. If they have a low estrogen detoxification ratio or a ratio of concern, we want to use diindolmethane, which is DIM, which is significantly decrease the release of nitric oxide, prostaglandin, E2, tumor necrosis factor alpha, interleukin 6, and IL beta. And so it inhibited LPS-induced increases in protein levels of inducible nitric oxide synthetase. So what this means that it can help decrease your risk of breast cancer. So it has an anti-cancer effect in experimental models, in other words. So we work with inflammation for anti-inflammatory, and we're opposing that like DIM does. It can help with cancer prevention. And we really want to emphasize the importance of our patients who have had, many coming to us now, who've had a diagnosis of breast cancer and are afraid of hormones and are afraid of doing anything. We can safely do, you know, we can safely do Mighty Maca, we can safely do DIM, we can safely use DHEA, right, and the vulvar cream to prevent those levels, or in a, I don't like oral, I use a BLA formulation of oral, which is a very slow absorbed form of DHEA. For oral, that's the one form I found. You can use a sublingual DHEA, but I haven't found any capsules that, you know, don't end up with some side effects. So we want to look at the way we deliver our hormone therapy is important, because otherwise we risk side effects through first pass metabolism on the liver. And that can go by pretty much anything, but emphasizing how important the you know, the sleep and the food and the nutrients are is really key. Back to Sarah's question about the patient with low DHEA. Remember that when we look at our major hormones, that's cortisol, insulin, and adrenaline, right? So we look at those three major hormones, and we address those first. As a functional gynecologist, we address those hormones first because those are the driving hormones. Those are going to drive our pathways. And then progesterone being the kind of a tempering hormone that we would add on to that, and the importance of that, different ways that it can be delivered. But typically in our menopause and PMS patient, we're using a topical cream starting at 20 milligrams from cycle day, you know, after ovulation typically, till the periods. In the menopause and not trying to conceive, and I mean the perimenopause, pause and not trying to conceive, and if they're symptomatic after the first week, I'll start after the first week of their symptoms, of their period, first, so day eight of, or seven of, or day eight of their cycle day. In the menopause, I have them do it pretty much every day. And I used to say day 1 through 25 or day 1 through 28, but then I realized how many of us miss a few days a month anyway. So just, you know, take it every night before you sleep. Occasionally take a weekend off of your hormone therapy just to give your body a reset. And no, great research on that, but I always believe in drug holidays, vitamin holidays, et cetera. We want to enhance our body's natural production, not suppress it. So we, you know, I do that in my recommendations. So that's key. And then I just added some research, but I'm happy to take more questions. But
there were a couple that came in here. Michelle had a question about, is the progesterone pregnenolone cream you were talking about Pura Balance, PPR?
Yes.
And then she wanted to know, then she's already taking the Biomatrix sublingual pregnenolone DHEA and licorice drops for her adrenal fatigue. Is it okay to add the PPR cream to that? Assuming she's been testing and isn't going, you know, too far in the other direction.
Hasn't been working?
Well, I remember her talking about her different tests, and it was working, but not, she wasn't already.
I would initially add the PPR cream, see what it does, and then maybe, you know, we can increase or back down depending, right? So we can increase or back down depending on how we do, but I would add the PPR cream. Use it, you know, I mean, I would say when you're using a cream, rotate sites. So I use a little bit around my eyes and my face, you know, my lips for my wrinkles. So I'll use it around my eyes and mouth for my wrinkles. And then I'll add, you know, around the vulva, the labia, you know, along the chest, you know, anywhere there's thin skin veins, but rotate the sites. Okay, we don't want to put it on our buttocks. It's going to be, you know, held onto in our fat. So we want it, you know, in and in and out, and using thin skin works. Using the vulva is a great area to use it on, around the labia, etc. It's perfectly fine to use it there. And then see, maybe just start at a half pump. See what you get. If you're getting too much progesterone, you'll be more moody. But rarely do I see that. And on these, this is a 20 milligram cream in a full pump. So I would just start at a half. And pregnenolone, I typically will go up to, depending on the client and what you test, you know, what how the testing is or symptoms, et cetera, but 50 to 100 milligrams of pregnenolone is what the research has associated with a good restorative prescription. So that's something to consider. It's so I would start low, go slow, take your time.
Great. Okay, so Sarah wanted to know, how come not the flax oil? I got the impression it was because you were talking about fiber, but maybe there were some other reasons.
Flax oil, because, well, definitely we want the flax seed, the ground flax seed for the fiber, but flax oil is an omega-6 and that can be pro-inflammatory.
So it has omega-6 in it, because it's still mostly omega-3.
Right. But it can be pro-inflammatory.
Fiber.
And okay. Yeah, if you have a PPR cream, I mean, it's good for 3 days post-manufacture date. So a year for sure, post the expiration date, which was a 2-year expiration date.
That's pretty typical, I would say, of most supplements, maybe not omega-3s because those do degrade, but most herbs and things like that tend to, you're forced by rules and regulations to put on a more conservative expiration date.
Right.
Yeah, and with any supplements, look at them, smell them. You know, if they look like they're off and they smell like they're off and they taste rancid, then yeah, toss them.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that was it. So half a pump one time a day at bedtime, day 10 to the first day of period. Is that what you're recommending for PPR?
Sorry, say that again.
So half a pump once a day at bedtime for the PPR?
Yes. Yeah. I would start with half pump once a day at bedtime.
Day 10 to the first day of period, or even day 8, as you said before. It could be as early as day 8.
Well, how old?
She's 50 and still having periods.
Oh, okay, good. I would, you know, see from when the symptoms start, but maybe start, you know, I would start at day 14 and feel like, okay, you're starting it. So let's start at day 14, conservative. Day 14 till the first day of your next period. And see, half pump, sometimes the week before your period, you need a full pump. You know, some patients I put on even a little more, and just because if their symptoms, if they're very estrogen dominant during that time, just depends. But being, you know, proactive, preventative, a half pump to one pump at bedtime. Yeah.
Yeah, and here's, you know, something Anna is modeling here for us in terms of how we're working with people. There's no protocol. There's a starting point. And for each individual, you're playing with how that works with them. You back it off, you add to it, you shift the dates. But we're really, when we understand the underlying physiology and biochemistry, we're able to then think through why they may be responding in a certain way and tailor. So we're providing you from clinical experience and from the research what's a good starting point. But that may not necessarily where the ending point will be or the optimal point. And, right, you have this curve, so they start to get results, they're at this level, maybe increase it, and then all of a sudden they're stabilized, and then you can start to pull that dose down.
Right, and that's true with most supplementation. So it is, you know, like I would say, God created seasons for a reason, right? So we're going to use things, and working with thousands of patients and hormonal issues, sometimes like these winter months, sometimes we're on more hormonal therapy. In summer months, when we're outside getting plenty of vitamin D, which is part of PMS and perimenopause, I didn't mention it here, but that's like core, that's like, you know, so basic at this point that you want to make sure you're getting your vitamin D. But like in the summer months, we'll back down. What my thrill was when my patients were able to, you know, slightly adjust their dosing based on how they were. Now, you know, it's totally different than, for example, the guy on testosterone who thinks a little bit's good, more must be better, and you're like way off the charts. That's not okay. I mean, that's never okay. A little bit goes a long way. Remember, my approach is that physiologic balance, a little prevention. In the menopause, we're being designed for another role of life, right? Another level of cognition, introspection, spiritual growth at this point. We're not going to, I don't want to challenge that with suppressing any natural process. And that's so important to me because, you know, it's like, God's taught me at every step of my life, you know, different lessons, but recognizing we need to honor our biochemistry and our design, but yet we're not in our Garden of Eden, right? We're in a, a cesspool of toxins, and we're learning to live with it and adapt. And it's so important that we really optimize our body's hormonal structure and that we keep connected to others like you're doing here, connected to others that are doing what you're doing, that are living a healthy lifestyle, and that we're connecting in our community to make the next generations healthier. And that's part of our role in this transition too. So learning how to adjust your hormones yourself or with your clients, let's start here, let's start low. Let's give this, you know, I would say 2 to 3 months, but typically they're better in a few weeks, if not a couple days, you know, they'll sleep well, etc. So, you know, let's give this time, little steps, little bits of time, you know, one adjustment, you know, at a time, one healthy habit adopted and one unhealthy habit, you know, lost, that we want to just keep working with our clients in this relationship. A little bit goes a long way. And sometimes we need more, sometimes we need less, sometimes we need to stop everything with hormonal therapy and then start again. And I've done that over and over. I'm like, what the heck's going on? And your labs are all over the place and symptoms are all over the place. Like, let's just take you off of everything. Let's start again with one thing at a time. But always lifestyle changes, emphasizing the importance of the TLC, care, therapeutic lifestyle changes.
I love it. And you know what you're saying, and this is really critical for all of you, and some of you, everybody's been as a different level of where they're in this healthcare regime. But when we look at bioidenticals, people always ask me, well, do you believe in bioidenticals? Do you believe in supplementing? It's like, we want to be looking at physiologic doses. We're looking at, oh, this gland, for whatever reason, has halted or slowed down in its production of this hormone. And a lot of the stuff Dr. Anna talked about with the lifestyle and the environment and the toxins and the plastics and all that interfere. So we're looking at, it's under functioning. Yes, we want to do things to make it function better. And then what we want to do is we want to give the little difference and then be boosting how that gland is functioning so that maybe we can decrease it. But face it, you got the gland removed, right? Somebody's had a thyroidectomy. You're not going to get them off thyroid hormone. There's nothing to produce it. You've got to had a hysterectomy in a young woman, not in a postmenopausal as much, but if you've got a young woman who's had a hysterectomy, there ain't nothing there to produce those hormones. You have to give it, but you don't want to give it in the pharmacological abnormal levels that these docs are doing. That the regular conventional medical people are doing, because they cause problems. And that's where, you know, the whole Women's Health Initiative and all those studies, which are showing that, yeah, you give these people estrogen and they have a problem, so you don't give them estrogen anymore. No, they were giving them non-bioidentical, and they were giving them pharmacologic doses, and they were giving them unopposed with progesterone, or they were given synthetic progesterone. And so there's a lot of bad rap around hormone replacement, but there are things that we need. And if you're not making them, you owe it to your client to help them. So that's the stuff I wanted you to really see. And, you know, so much of what Dr. Anna is describing is how my feeling about it. As if you're not an MD yet, or an ND or a DO, you don't have the license to be able to prescribe the hormones. But there's a lot of over-the-counter stuff like this progesterone, pregnenolone, and like the Biomatrix DHEA and pregnenolone. They don't do progesterone anymore. But do it wisely, because what happens if you go into pharmacological or very high doses of hormones, whether it's thyroid, progesterone, estrogen, anything, you give your body the message, hey, we're good. don't worry about it. We don't have to make anymore. And then if that happens over time, you get suppressed and you can no longer make it because for 5 years, your pituitary is not telling your thyroid to make thyroid hormone. So that's just my soapbox. So,
okay. Sorry about that. I had, a little, you know, it's 6 p.m. here. My father, who's 90, God bless him, this month, was taking my daughter to dance, dropped her off to dance, and he's supposed to pick her up at 5:15. Well, he fell asleep. she's texting me, and like, is someone picking up Ava? I'm like, yes. And so I just texted him. So I'm sorry about that, but speaking of age and hormones, I mean, it's really important. My father was told that, we were told that as far as men go, that, oh, you know, at 79, my dad was struggling and cranky and irritable and just not himself on 120 units of insulin and inflamed and just cranky and stingy. And none of that was my dad. And I was like, Dad, let me help you. I put him on a detox program, started him on testosterone, did some labs. And, you know, I mean, in 30 days, he went from taking the wheelchair in the airport to come to me. He lives in Philadelphia, and he was visiting me. This is 11 years ago now, okay? And to like being out on my tennis court walking with the kids in 30 days, had lost 30 pounds. Imagine all that inflammation. And he went down from 120 units of insulin to 20. His doctors, you know, I called him, I said, something's wrong with my dad. He's on all these medicines. And really, you know, I mean, how can I work with you? And so I ended up taking him off of 3 or 4 medicines and all, you know, all of this. But what the doctor had told me when I initially called before I started taking his health into my own hands was that, you know, he's 79, he's lived a good life, right? Well, what does that mean? What does that mean? And we just had this instance again, and back in September, October, Dad lives on his own in Pennsylvania at 89. And he'd come down, he had been in the hospital twice already. So he came down, insisted he come down for a visit, ends up in the hospital again. And they're like, you know, digestive heart failure, renal failure, you know, I mean, you know, he's had a good life. And I'm like, okay. So I put him on my keto alkaline plan, right? To get him producing ketones, detoxing, can you get really a lot of grains and kale and broth and stuff into him. And, you know, I mean, he's driving to pick up my daughter. Okay. But he fell asleep, but he's not, he's amazing. In other words, his cognition is so good. But when he's in that sick state he was in, I mean, it looked like dementia, Alzheimer's. I mean, it looked really bad. And, you know, he's just amazing. We'll have the most intellectual conversations, and that's key. He's like back to his old self. And that's at 80, he'll be 90 this next month. And so, you know, there's no age limit on health. We correct these functional imbalances and then we're good. But he, you know, he had dialysis today, so he usually has a nap and he overslept, but
I think it's awesome to hear that, because so many times, like what they said, oh, he's 79, he's led a good life. It's like, you know, just let him die comfortably is basically what they're saying. You know,
we right.
have to do with him. He's led a good life. Don't worry about it. And now you've got an extra 11 years out of him. And that's pretty cool. Yeah. So I think, yeah, I'm just really excited by what you're sharing. So I know you have a couple more slides to do, and I know you need to go because this is very late for you. So go ahead and finish up, and we'll let people know.
Well, I think that's, you know, that's the essence of it. And there's a couple more scientific slides that I shared here that I share clinically, because often what happens is people talk about progesterone oral versus transdermal hormone therapy. Like when we're using progesterone on patients or, you know, or for our fertility patients or in the perimenopause, using a cream or vaginal delivery is very, very safe. When we've studied both estrogen and progesterone, oral versus transdermal hormonal therapy, what we find and what this slide shows you, well, here is looking at your lipid panel, right? Transdermal estrogens help like decrease triglycerides, but oral estrogens increase triglycerides. So that's important to understand. And transdermal and oral estrogen increases healthy HDL. So that's important to understand. But when we add a synthetic progestin, it attenuates that. It makes it not so not such a pronounced effect. But we know transdermal is different than oral. Transdermal is safer. So the conclusion, and this was published in Circulation in 2007, right? This is, you know, this should be standard of care, but oral but not transdermal estrogen is associated with an increased risk of venous thromboembolism. So when we're treating patients with vaginal dryness, you know, using, denying vaginal estrogen is not okay. It's just not okay because we can use it safely and we know that we'll be improved, but we can be safer with vaginal DHEA, right? We can be safer with vaginal progesterone. We don't need to use, I mean, if we're using the precursors, we're not going to need the estrogen per se. And that's important to recognize. Vaginal androgen therapy is very, very safe. So in addition, it said it, when this study was published, it looked at micronized progesterone and pregnane derivative, so a synthetic type of progesterone, but you know, are safe with respect to thrombotic risk. But it did not show any increase of thrombosis with bioidentical progesterone. And that's what we're going to use. I'm not using progestins. And so it's important if you have an issue that you are able to share this research with you know, your primary provider. But we know that synthetic progestins may be thrombogenic. So we're not going to use Provera. We're not going to use Agestin. We're not going to, you know, so those are prescription Provera, you know, Prempro, et cetera. Those are prescription progestins, but we will use bioidentical progesterone, micronized progesterone such as Prometrium. But vaginal or cream is going to bypass first pass hepatic metabolism and be even safer. So that's important to look at. Actually, in the study by in Circulation showed that for venous thromboembolism, the people on oral micronized progesterone had a lower risk of a VTE, of emboli. People on oral estrogen had 4.2 times the risk, or synthetic progestins 3.9 times the risk. So like what Rita Marie was saying, when we studied hormone therapy in the Women's Health Initiative study, when we studied hormone therapy, we, you know, we were using synthetics. We were using oral formulations and synthetic progestins. So no wonder we created havoc within our system. So it's really important. That's why I do like submucosal vaginal creams, and it just bypasses. Sometimes I will use, like if I've got a patient who had a hysterectomy and ovaries taken out and early, like before age 50, and I may use oral estrogen because that has been shown to help with angiogenesis, be healthy for the heart, but you know, very rare and very small amount. So there's reasons as a bioidentical hormone prescriber that I would fine tune, but in core, our progesterone, pregnenolone cream, you know, DHEA, you know, transdermal creams, things like that are going to be safe. And that's important to remember. I will tell you, because I'm sharing this with you, like with my DHEA vulvar cream coming out, that the only population that I would find it contradicted to use that cream in is a patient who has had breast cancer and is on tamoxifen. The research on tamoxifen and taking oral DHEA is controversial enough for me to say in a patient on tamoxifen, I'm not going to put DHEA, but I wouldn't put a patient on tamoxifen. So there you go. And then this is how to get a hold of me and be affiliates for my programs. The Women's Restorative Health Program, 8-week head-to-toe kind of, you know, walks you through my recommendations, the reason for them. It's very patient-friendly. And so you can be an affiliate for these programs, Women's Restorative Health and Sexual CPR, and get 50% affiliate commission, as well as MightyMaka.com. There's a 20% affiliate commission on with Mighty Maka. And so, you know, contact my team at GIMS, G-I-M-S, that's for Golden Isles Medical Spa, G-I-M-S at QuebecaHealth.com. And then I put up here my email, drquebec@quebecahealth.com. So I've been honored really to talk with all of you today to be part of this curriculum. And I'm really glad to be here with all of you.
Yeah, so I wanted to just say thank you so very much for taking so much time out of your busy day. And I know, you know, we've introduced a lot of these folks to the Mighty Mach at your generous donations at the Shine Conference. And it is a great thing to be sharing with your clients because there's some awesome stuff. There's also a gift that you had given, and I don't know what actually that gift is, but I have the link to it somewhere here, and I will be happy to share it with them. But can you tell us what that is?
So is it feelfabulous.com? Is it quebecahealth.com/gifts?
Let's see. So yeah, that's the one. quebecahealth.com/gifts.
That's gonna give you my ebook, my Feel Good, Look Good Secrets ebook. That'll give you my Feel Fabulous webinar. And that'll give you a couple other really good things on there, including a discount to my store. So yeah, definitely take advantage of that link. And I look forward to everyone, you know, continuing to interact. And I'm really grateful that y'all are here taking this extra step in education and what you're providing to your clients, yourself, and your community.
So thank you. Thank you again, everybody, for being here. And go ahead and check out the Dr. Anna Kabeka's site. She's very conscientious about products and really does research, apparently. And I can't wait for this vulva cream to come out. It's awesome. So thanks, everybody. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh, Michelle says, I truly wish there were more practitioners who do what you and Dr. Riedemann do.
Aw, great feedback.
That's what we're doing. That's what we're training here. So thank you. Bye-bye now.